In the new book, Kent State, by Deborah Wiles, she tells the harrowing true story of the Kent State shooting that took place May 4th, 1970, 50 years ago. It ended four innocent lives the day that National Guardsmen opened fire on students at a university campus peacefully protesting the Vietnam War. Wiles gives a terrifying, galvanizing picture of what happened that weekend in Ohio, an event that still resonates deeply. To this day, there is still argument over what happened and why, as campus shootings remain prevalent. Kent State's commentary on gun violence and student activism is certainly more relevant than ever. The name of the new book is Kent State, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Deborah Wiles to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Joe. Thank you for having me. I do appreciate it.
Very nice to have you on the program. So give us an idea of what brought you to this story of wanting to tell a very tragic story to young people, to a new generation of young people.
Well, I've been writing about the 60s for a long time. I've written a trilogy of novels, Anthem, Countdown, and Revolution, about the 60s. They're documentary novels, and so they're stories, but they also have within them scrapbook material of primary sources, photographs, newspaper clippings, that sort of thing. And as I wrote Anthem, the 1969 book that came out last year, I kept bumping up against Kent State in my research. And I realized I've never, ever forgotten how visceral that felt, May 4th, 1970, because every time I'd bump up against this in research, I would recoil and I'd say, ugh, that's so awful. I was 16 years old. It was 3 days before my 17th birthday. And I lived in Charleston, South Carolina at the time. My dad was in the Air Force and was flying C-141 star lifters from Charleston Air Force Base to Vietnam with supplies and flying back with bodies. And we never talked about the war at the dinner table. We just knew that we weren't supposed to. But in school, this is all we could talk about. And on May 4th, we were stunned into silence. It was just unbelievable that the government, our government, could come in and kill its citizens, children in their schoolyard. All of us were getting ready for our senior year of high school. We were going to go off to college and look what's going on. And so finally, as I finished Anthem, I said to my editor, David Levithan at Scholastic, I said, there's no way I can't write about Kent State. I just don't know how. And we talked. We had several conversations. And both of us had just read Lincoln and the Bardo by George Saunders, and had both loved that book and its structure of all these disembodied voices talking to us. So we chose to go that direction, or I did. David added the element in of collective memory. How about telling this from the memory of all those who were there? Because a historical event is what everyone makes it in their own memory. So that's the way we went.
So talk a little bit about the challenge of writing that way, about a group of people and understanding, and to give us an understanding of what they were going through at that moment.
Well, again, as a 17-year-old, what I really knew was that four teenagers had died, 19 and 20-year-olds had died, nine were wounded. The National Guard had opened fire on unarmed kids and protesting the war, and that's really what I knew. So when I went to Kent State, I'd done a couple of years' worth of research, and I went to Kent State and sat for some days in their archive. They have a May 4th special collection archive. And in that archive, I began to read oral histories and letters to the editor, to the newspapers, and I sifted through mountains of material. And that's when I started coming across these different voices. Many National Guardsmen were very young. Some of them had been students or still were students at Kent State who were called out. Some were rubber plant workers in Akron. Some were farmers. Nobody wanted to be there. And the students were some protesters, some not getting involved at all. And then we had the townspeople who were, you're ruining our town, townies, they called them. And we're writing letters to the editor after the fact saying they should have killed more of them. And I stood there holding that letter and looking at it and tearing up and thinking, what kind of mindset is that? And then realizing that that was a mindset that was very prevalent and it needed to be represented if I was going to tell the story and as a rounded story of a time and place. And then the Black United students entered saying, hey, you see a soldier standing there with a gun and you don't think it's loaded? Because the white kids were all saying, they don't have real bullets, and then found out that they did. So we just had so many different voices to interweave. So I decided to make it a conversation back and forth between these disembodied voices, students, townies, National Guard, Black United students, everybody who had a voice that was major in that story needed to be represented. So that's what it came out as, lineated prose. I won't call it poetry.
Well, no, but
a conversation.
It takes place over 4 days. And through that conversation, what story do you believe the reader understands about what happened during that time, during those 4 days?
Well, the book is addressed to our young friend. You know, look, we have a new young friend here. Let him in, her in, them in to listen to this story. And again, it's addressed to this reader midway through. And then at the end, are you still here, our young friend? And I've presented it because every author has a point of view when they begin to write. And I presented it as a piece that's told primarily from the student's point of view, laced in with all these other voices. But I want them to hear, I guess what I'm doing is I'm issuing a call to action. I want them to know that people who don't listen, that first of all, I want them to know that our government is of the people, for the people, by the people, that we have First Amendment rights in this country that give us the freedom to petition, the freedom to protest, the freedom of the press, like we have right here today, you and I talking. This is one reason public radio is so important. We have the right to talk about these things. But that when the government begins to suppress those rights, then you have a very ripe moment for anger and violence. And that's what we see in this country, in any country, really, when people are squashed, when they're not allowed a voice. So we find ourselves in such a time now, I think. So this is a call to action for young people to wake up, see what happened then, look at how it fits into the arc of our history, and what are we going to do about it today?
From your working with young people, do you think they're receptive to that message, of understanding that message?
I do. I really do. I've worked with young people for many, many years in schools and conferences and libraries. And to a person, especially, well, all ages, I'm going to say, they understand injustice. They understand unfairness. They understand the idea that change is made person by person, event by event, but they don't always see themselves as part of that event or part of that person or part of that change. So the challenge is to have them see that, hey, this is you too. You know, these young people could have been you. They are you today. And we look at the violence going on today. Even I'm drawing a line in Kent State between the government shooting its citizens then and violence today in our country today, even to school shootings today. I mean, there's a reason that we look at these and say, why and not again, because we want things to change.
When you look at this story, and obviously, as you say, you want things to change, which even though this happened 50 years ago, it is so relevant, isn't it? We can see this, unfortunately, happening today.
Well, the massacre at Kent State takes its place in a timeline that's riddled with moments of government overreach in a democracy that's supposed to represent all the people. Today, we see these injustices play out in culture wars and in the way we've silenced minority populations, the way we've gerrymandered election districts, the way we've exercised voter repression. We've even moved from slavery to emancipation to mass incarceration. We've just seen an increase in violence in this country that includes school shootings as well and lone gunmen. And there's this meme making the rounds now saying that March 2020 is the first month since 2002 that there have been no school shootings in this country. And I'm not sure how verifiable that is. I checked into that claim, and it really depends on your frame of reference and how you define shooting. But the point remains that violence is down when we are sheltered in place or when we come together as people united in a cause, in this case, survival, instead of fighting against one another for our point of view because we aren't heard. So even in this COVID time, we're coming together state by state, community by community, sometimes because we feel national leadership is scattered on the issue, but we're doing it.
Mm.
We're doing it. So this is much like college students who came together to protest the Vietnam War after Nixon's announcement of the invasion of Cambodia. Same thing.
Deborah Wiles is a 2-time National Book Award finalist. The new book is Kent State. It is published by Scholastic. Deborah, thank you very much for sharing with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program today.
And thank you very much for having me. I appreciate the time.
Thank you very much. Be well. Again, the name of the book is Kent State. It is published by Scholastic. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.